Flashback Twin Cities, Club 1220. Is it spring? Is it fall? Is it winter? Is it summer? I can't tell.
It's one of your favorite colors of gray. That's what it is.
50 Shades of
I don't
spring.
Know what you mean.
This is Flashback Twin Cities. I am Tom Osman, and back from special assignment somewhere in parts unknown, our friend Tom.
Kind of like James Bond.
Yeah. Well,
really, if you get down to the nitty gritty.
Well, it's a good thing you came back just in time for some more snow.
Come on.
I know.
I got here on Wednesday night, opened up my curtains on Thursday morning to see snow coming down. First words out of my mouth, probably can't air.
But so can you share the destination you were at, the place that you were on special assignment at?
I was special assignment over in the Bahamas.
And
over in the Bahamas, Nassau.
Nassau, that is fantastic. And we're grateful to have you back. We had fun with Jenna last week.
Oh, yeah. She's always good.
She brought some sunshine with her, and I appreciate you bringing back the clouds and gray.
You're welcome.
I know. We had a lot to do today. We are going to have, actually, let's start out with our guest. Is Deborah on the line? Not yet. Okay.
Definitely am.
Well, and to our listeners, this is one of our first guests we had in the show. She was known as Debbie Ely on TV, on WCCO-TV. And Facebook friends here on tcmedianow.com. I find out, I see this picture of our friend Deborah with Drew Carey, and I'm wondering, well, what is going on there? We don't have a Hollywood reporter, but we do have the next best thing, and that is Deborah Ely Lawrence. And Deborah, what happened last week? I'm watching WCCO-TV, watching The Price is Right, and there you are.
Well, as I got to do it, I got to come on down and be a contestant.
So tell me a little bit about this, because there's a lot of us here who want to win cash and prizes and be on stage. We hear all these, I search the web and trying to find out, what does it take to get on The Price is Right? You're in line, and they pick you.
You have to start out with tickets. We knew we were going to go out to Southern California for our daughter's spring break, and so ahead of time, my husband got online and started looking for tickets to some of the shows. And while he couldn't score tickets to Ellen, he did score tickets to The Price is Right and American Idol. And so we flew out there and showed up bright and early on the 27th of March. And when you get out there to this show, you stand in line for a mighty long time. And so we got out there and had a chance to meet a lot of very interesting people from across the United States. It is a true cross-section of people. There were some fellow Minnesotans there. And you wait and you wait and you wait. And then about an hour or so before they tape the show, the producer comes out and he groups together groups of about 10 or 12 people and does a quick interview of everybody around the big picnic table. And you tell them your name, your occupation, and then he proceeds to ask folks questions. And I think he's looking for somebody who's talkative, which of course I am, and has some effervescence and some personality, and I must have had what they were looking for, I guess.
So that you randomly get called on down. You don't know that they're going to call your name, right, when you're in the audience?
Absolutely. There are 350 people in the audience, and 9 people make it on the show as contestants, and you don't know until George Gray, the announcer, intones, "Come on down." And in fact, it is so noisy and rambunctious in that studio, you really can't even hear your name. That's why everybody looks so surprised, because suddenly you'd look down and there's a cue card with your name on it. And so you're in a state of shock.
Yeah, on some of those shows, it always looks like the family or the people around the person are telling them they won. Go down
there. And that's
there.
Exactly what happened.
Let's talk about 3 moments of your heart must be racing. The first moment is your name gets called up, you go down there.
Yeah.
Then you win, you guess the price correctly enough to be able to call it up to the game. That has to be number 2. Then you win on the wheel. You got closest to a dollar. And then mm-hmm. you go to the showcase. Actually, there's four. This must have been a very what was your heart thinking? You've been on TV a long time. I mean, you've done this, but this is a lot of adrenaline pumping through your mind.
Well, and this is where you have to know pricing. And I embarrassed myself in the first round because the first item was a retro dishwasher. Well, I'm sorry, but I don't go out and buy a lot of appliances. And so, you know, mindful of the fact that I didn't want to go over in the price, I went way under, I guess $249, and well, suffice to say, I didn't get called up for the first game.
But many people pick a dollar and get picked up also, though.
Yeah, that's true, but in this case, I was way off. So the next round of guessing was some sunglasses, some designer sunglasses. Well, of course, I'm one of those who buys my sunglasses from Target. And so, you know, I'm not familiar with the price of Armani sunglasses, but go figure, my 18-year-old daughter is familiar with the price of them, and she's hollering down a price. And fortunately, it was close enough to the real price, and I got the chance to come down.
How do you even, when I watch the show and I see people screaming out numbers when there's a contestant on stage, probably confused at everything that's happened in the last 20 minutes, do you even hear the numbers they're shouting out to you?
After I made that first foible of saying $249 for the dishwasher, I thought, I better start listening to this audience because I think they're a little more in tune with the pricing than I am. And as it happens, my husband sat next to a fella named Chuck. And Chuck is, I think, a Price is Right, wonk. And so he was on top of the pricing. And so Brent and Chuck talked about the pricing, and then they'd both holler out a price. And, so I started watching for their cues.
There's a lot of strategy behind this. My guest is Deborah Lawrence. She was not only a fantastic reporter at WCCO-TV, but also a successful Price is Right winner. And I'm really fascinated by this because, again, I intend to go out there and win a car also. But let's talk about the Showcase Showdown. Okay, this is the part I really like, and it's on YouTube. We don't have our internet connection up to the audio today, but you can go to YouTube and check this out, or actually on the Price is Right website. So you're at the showcase, and you see your fabulous showcase prizes, and you won it.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, in effect, they show you the two prizes, apparently I had the best price in the showcase showdown or whatever, and so I had the chance to issue the first pick. So they showed us the trip to Belize and the sailboat and the patio furniture, and I decided to turn that down and pass it on to Malik, who was the other showcase showdown contestant. And then I had a chance to see what was behind door number two, and I really had thought going in, if I'm fortunate enough to do this, it would probably be nice to get another vehicle because my daughter's going to be taking one of our cars to college this next year. So, and by gosh, I was lucky when they opened the door and there was a Jeep Patriot and a trip to Vancouver and some snow skiing equipment, which, of course, my husband and I don't snow ski, but hey, The car sure looked mighty appealing.
So let me ask you this. Do you get to bring the car home, or does it come like in 12 weeks?
Well, first what happens is when you get done with the show, they hustle all of the winners into a room backstage, and that is where you start signing
a ton of
papers. And basically you promise that you won't reveal the results to anyone until the day of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And so we taped on March 27th. The show aired on April 26th. So I went ahead and, had to sign non-disclosure forms. And then after the show airs, the companies that provided prizes start contacting you. So in the last week, I've been contacted by an automobile dealer in California who helped scout out the right color. And as it happens in California, Jeeps are all two-wheel drive. They have no need for a four-wheel. So I asked if I could buy up and pay the difference and get a four-wheel drive. So hopefully it'll be on a transport coming our way in the next couple of weeks.
That's very exciting. No, that's very, very cool. I know that, again, a lot of people that I know who have gone on as audience members have not been able to be called up. But not only did you get called up and also the wheel, you won the showcase. I think that's...
Yeah, imagine that.
That's pretty
awesome. Once-in-a-lifetime experience. Oh, which, by the way, when you're on a show like this, they also make you sign a form that says you will not appear on another game show for the next 10 years. So truly is a once-in-a-lifetime thing for me.
So Let's Make a Deal and the new Hollywood Squares are out now for 8, 9 years. Okay.
But we want to share the goodie with a lot of people. So, you know, it's only fair that many people should have this opportunity.
Well, I think it's great, and I commend you for not revealing the secrets. I know that on the social media sites you sent some pictures occasionally, and a lot of us were wondering, okay, did you just get a nice picture? But you didn't just get up there. You won it all. Well, we're all very excited for you.
And here's the secret behind those pictures. Just like when somebody goes on a cruise, they have a photographer there ahead of time to take pictures of people before they go in the studio. And so that may have looked like the set, but in reality, the picture behind me was really a green screen. And like so many people going on a cruise or going to a luau or whatever, we decided to buy the pictures as a keepsake, not expecting that we would indeed be big winners.
If anyone has questions on how to do this, talk to Deborah Lawrence. She will give you the tips on how to be a successful Price is Right contestant. Deborah, thank you for calling in today. I appreciate this. This is great stuff.
Thank you so much.
We're going to take some notes here in order to get on and win some two-wheel Jeeps in California.
Two-wheel Jeeps. Might want to upgrade, yeah. That's a good call.
Yeah.
Thank you, Deborah.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, we have a big show today, and when we come back, we have Rob Lear of Lear Communications and formerly of KSDP-TV. He was a sports reporter, anchor, and investigative journalist for 24 years. We will be talking to Rob about his career after this commercial break on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond, and with me, my guest, Rob Lear of Lear Communications and formerly of KSDP-TV. Welcome.
Tom, thank you. What a pleasure to be here.
When's the last time you were behind the microphone? How long has it been?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, I do some announcing, some public address announcing, mm-hmm. and I've done some bits and pieces, but actually on the air, it's probably been, almost a decade.
Doesn't seem like that, though. It seems like it was just a couple of years ago.
Well, it's like riding a bike.
Right.
You know, when you were in the business as long as I was and enjoyed every day in the business, this was never work.
And it's May. It's sweeps month. So you would normally be, working on a big investigative story.
Right.
Some of them are, entertaining during May, especially on Channel 5. There's some good ones out there.
There's nothing like the sweeps in local television.
No.
And the stakes are high for everybody. And the intensity in the newsroom gets ramped up. And to be able to see the overnight ratings when you come into work the next day, there's just... there's something about being competitive and having those kind of competitive juices and getting, that kind of daily fix, if you will,
mm-hmm.
of the work that you were doing.
So 14 years in sports and about 10 years in investigative journalism, correct?
That is correct, yes.
It's May, so I'm sure you're missing right now. You could be at the Twins game, in the 40-degree weather, reporting on some... a lackluster team this year. I hate to say that, but it's not been great. But do you miss sports reporting? Do you miss traveling on the road and seeing the Twins and seeing the Vikings?
Well, I don't necessarily miss the sports reporting because I've now become a bigger fan since mm-hmm. I've been out of the broadcasting business. Because there, when you're working as a reporter, there are certain restraints and there are certain things that you couldn't cross lines. It's much funner being a fan
right,
than it is
right.
to be the reporter. But you know, what I've missed since I've been out of the business is the adrenaline rush of the chase of a story.
Mm-hmm.
And there is just nothing that can match to be a reporter and to work on a story that's enterprising,
mm-hmm.
to work on a story that nobody else has, and then to go through that checks and balances process. And at KSTP, it was every story was just extremely well scrutinized,
mm-hmm.
Like it should be.
Right.
But in today's social media world, you know, even with the last big event there in Boston, you know, so much criticism about the urgency to get stories out, that those facts just were not checked in that kind of a process. But so the adrenaline rush of a story was my passion, and that's the part that I miss, is that I don't have a way to share anything else that I find anymore, you know, along the way in my business now as a media consultant.
And it's important to point out, it's, you know, 10 years out of the business of actual reporting. The internet in 2003 was still, and it was there, but it was email. It was not the social media aspect of being able to report and find facts or find alleged facts within minutes. It was not prevalent yet. I mean, when you were doing reporting, you were doing the actual pull up books, pull out the phone,
no,
call
this
people.
This was gumshoe reporting,
right?
Absolutely, this was. Yeah, this was back in the day. Yeah, this is when you could sit on a story for the 10 o'clock news.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I had this conversation recently with a young reporter in the market, because as my business, I'm now consulting companies that are dealing with the press, and you know, nobody can even comprehend anymore that. The fact that you'd have a story and then you'd want to decide when you're going to put it on the air. I mean,
right.
You just, you know, now we live in an instant society. And when you have something, you get it out there, and there's so many channels to do that.
Regardless of the state that the product is in. And we talk about back in the day, and my guest Rob Lear today from Lear Consulting and KSTP, the day could be 5 years ago. I mean, now we talk about the day, you know, 20 years ago, the day would have been the golden age of radio and TV and mm-hmm. would have been a much more, what do you call it?
The day is always in flux.
The days are always seem to be better days than they were when we lived them. People say,
yeah.
Well, things are better.
Yes.
Things are better 20 years ago. And there's problems 20 years ago, too.
Yeah.
But right now, we could say 2007, 2008 was back in the day, because you look at the amount of digital information that we pass among each other just this morning. I was pulling up some stuff here for my interview with Rob, and I don't think 5 years ago I would have been able to pull out the amount of audio clips I did 5 years ago.
I think my back in the day was 1999, before I started using the internet. That's the back in the day.
And I'm sure everyone had wacky screen names at AOL.com. You know, Rob, let's just take a step back. I want to play a little clip here where it all began. This is
okay.
Then we'll talk a little bit about this era.
Good evening, everybody. On the top of the world of sports, North Dakota's two state universities can forget about thoughts of joining the Big Sky Conference, at least for another season. League officials meeting the night in Bozeman, Montana, rejected expansion bids from UND and NDSU, citing problems in scheduling and travel with a 10-team conference. This move was looked upon with great anticipation by Sioux and Bison fan supporters as a great opportunity to gain Division I status in both football and basketball and to enhance scheduling with non-conference opponents. So with Noel going to be the answer, sorry fans, but this could mean another year with Platteville on the Sioux schedule. The Minnesota Twins are enjoying the day off today, just as the Twins' bewildered pitching staff. Minnesota coming off a horrible road trip, winning only 3 of 9 ball games.
You're good. Where'd you find that?
Runs or better on that Eastern swing. Currently in fifth place in the American League's West Division.
Yeah, that could have been last week, or it could have been. This was 1978, the Rob Lear audition tape. I believe this is the tape that Stanley Hubbard looked at and decided to bring you to town.
You were absolutely right. I had forgotten that was even in my pile of stuff. And did I ever share with you the story about my interview and audition at KSTP?
No, but let's hear it.
It was back in 78, 79, and I was a young budding journalist who had it was my dream to be able to work in my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're from Edina. For people who don't know, you're from Edina.
I grew up in Minneapolis,
okay.
You know, Minneapolis Southwest, right over by Lake Harriet.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to school at the University of North Dakota. And so I had some radio television experience at the University of North Dakota and their School of Journalism and all that. And I had put together a tape and wanted to go to the next step, which I thought could be KSTP. And I had my audition tape, and you know, now everybody, it's all, you know, electronic file, and
sure.
You're, you know, I don't even think you'd carry it with you. But in this particular interview that I had with Mr. Hubbard at Hubbard Broadcasting on University Avenue, they asked me to bring my tape. You know, I mean, it was through a family friend that had referred me to get the chance to have this opportunity. I bring my tape into Mr. Hubbard's office, and he's got this stack of tape machines, and it's the old, that's the big
three quarter inch
mm-hmm. videotapes, which they don't make at all anymore.
Don't I know?
Which is your world in trying to convert them. And anyway, long story short, it came to after we had a lot of conversations about, you know, this and that, he wanted to put my tape in. And so he goes over to this stack of playback machines that he had, and he puts my tape in, and they had big, bold buttons that they were mm-hmm. very, you know, these manual buttons.
All right.
And you couldn't ever have used those machines and not at some time push the wrong button, right? Okay. I mean, I know I did. And so he puts the tape in, and instead of pushing play, he pushed fast forward. Okay. Well, I had my, you know, behind the news desk clip first.
Right.
And then second, at the University of North Dakota, I did a lot of play-by-play of hockey.
Right.
And because they do play college hockey up there, and they put a lot of their behind their journalism school doing hockey. Well, you know, anybody from this region knows Stanley Hubbard's passion for hockey. And it was like a match made in heaven. This was like supposed to be. So he's, you know, after he said, oh, because it started to fast forward, then he pushed play. So it's gone right by my on-set material.
Hey, anchors are damn a dozen. We want to see a guy that can do some play-by-play hockey.
Well, and that's what this became. So he said, oh, you do hockey? I said, well, yeah, at the University of North Dakota, I do the hockey games, and, you know, I've done them for the last couple of years, and I travel with the team, which I did, and this and that. Well, and then that led to he then, at, you know, 5 minutes later, he called up Stan Turner, who was the news director at KSTP at that time. And he introduced me to Stan, and he said, Stan, this guy is going to start tomorrow, and he'll be in your newsroom, and let's find a spot for him in the sports department.
And let's talk about, I mean, Channel 5, this was the number one news talent,
oh, yeah.
news company in town. This is 51% share of the ratings. Ron Majors is there. This is the place to work at. You're not going to a independent UHF station. You're going to the place in town.
No, this was, they were getting a 53 share on Sunday nights at that time.
And did you do, now, I don't recall, did the KSTP have the North Stars at that time, or did you do some?
Not at that time, but throughout my tenure with the sports affiliation with KSTP, they must have had the North Stars two or three times. They'd get them for 2-3 years,
right,
and
right.
They'd lose them and then come back. They had University of Minnesota packages. And what a great opportunity. I mean, you'd go up to the second floor, and you could work on the radio station on the sports side anyway. And then, you know, you had the job with the television newsroom, and it was all right in the same building.
My guest, Rob Lear, talking about the first days at KSTP, coming from Grand Forks to St. Paul, Minneapolis. So hockey is your passion. Hockey is your passion.
Oh,
hockey,
yes.
Hockey's
yes.
The sport itself, playing it. We had a guest a few months ago named Bob Bruce, who credits you to showing him how to play hockey. And
did he?
Oh, yeah.
He should have. I'm glad to hear that.
Oh yeah. Well, he said. Yeah. Well, that and he says that you owe him that Lake Placid trip too. But
well, he did give me that assignment. Yes.
we'll duke that out a different time. Let's play a clip. This is from 1985, January 21st, and Rob Lear reporting on Herb Brooks.
Well, it has been an absolutely amazing day in the news, and there have also been some interesting developments in sports.
Certainly have, and this one, though, has been talked about for some time. Herb Brooks to the Minnesota North Stars? Well, that's a personnel move that's been rumored for a long time, and with today's announcement that the Rangers have fired Brooks as their coach and replaced him with general manager Craig Patrick, that talk is starting to heat up all over again. Brooks had served as the Rangers head coach since 1981, but in 3.5 seasons behind the Big Apple's bench, Brooks's team never lived up to the expectations of his gold medal winning ways of 1980. This year, the Rangers fell to fifth place in the Patrick division and have won only 15 times in their first 45 games. Herb's contract with the Rangers expired at the end of the season, so naturally there had been a great deal of speculation that he would not return. It's no secret that Minnesota is Herb's home. In fact, his family has continued to live here while Herb was working in New York. As for Brooks joining the North Stars, General Manager Lou Nanny told me today he would not hesitate to add Brooks to his staff. That is, if Herb is interested. Louie made it clear that Glenn Sonmore is his coach, and even though Herb's forte is coaching the North Star, that is, his forte is coaching, the North Stars would welcome Brooks as a coordinator of scouting and development. Asked how soon that could happen.
That's a lot of legends you're talking to in that day.
Well, and did the Herb Brooks coaching saga ever end? I mean, it was just a great character, a great man, and he was on again, off again, and what a great story that played itself out. You said that was 85?
That was January 21st, 1985.
You know, and that went on for more than a decade, you know, and I remember when he was named, when he took the North Stars job, we ended up going to New York, and because there were these league meetings, and that's where the Gunn brothers, I remember it was, you know, KSTP allowed me to travel a great deal as a reporter. And I mean, that's the side of the business. It's changed a lot because now you can always get somebody else to do it with
Someone's cell phone can pick up the same video that they can, you know, fly you out to do.
Right. But back in this day, well, if we call it back in the day, we did a lot of that kind of gumshoe reporting. And Herb would later tell me and Lou Nanny, because they were together. They were at the Marriott Marquis in Times Square. And we had gone out and were trying to find where Herb and the guns, and we were following the story.